I'm here today with Teresa Morales de Phillips, and Teresa is the regional coordinator of the Santa Cruz Regional Partnership Council of First Things First. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you, Julie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it is such a pleasure to have a chance to talk with you about First Things First, and I think that there are many people in Patagonia that may not have heard about First Things First, and could you just start us off with what is First Things First? What is it, and what is it based on?
First Things First is a new program, a new system that is here to help children and families with children birth through age 5 to start ready and healthy to go on to life and school, really. But basically, First Things First was created in Arizona to help children birth through age 5 and to help programs that help children in that age group.
And what caused Arizona to do this? What's this based on?
Well, I think that one thing that I always tell people when they ask me, why are we doing this? Why was this program created? If we look at one fact in Arizona, and really any other state in the nation, we look at how much it is being spent in jails, in building jails, and how much it is being spent in helping children achieve success and educational, you know, success. And when you compare those two figures, the millions of dollars that are going into building remedial kinds of programs as opposed to investing in preparing children to succeed, then I think that that really tells a story. That's, I think, one of the reasons why First Things First was created in the state. And in 2006, the voters in Arizona spoke loudly and clearly and said, we want to invest in children, in early childhood education. And so they created the initiative 203, which created this funds that come from tobacco and cigarette a tax on tobacco products that goes exclusively to this this fund to help children 0 to 5 years of age in Arizona.
I remember hearing a presentation before the vote about that initiative from Nadine Basha, where she presented some of the new scientific information that had been developed about the 0 to 5 years of early childhood development. And could you tell us or give us an overview of that new information?
The science and also the new research tells us that the age from birth through 5 years is the most important time in children's lives to receive all the information and all the, I would say the early literacy, the words, you know, the accumulation of verbal skills, and everything that happens in the brain of a child happens between birth and 5. And what is really amazing about the presentation that I also use sometimes when I go into the community is to show people the difference that it makes for a child when we compare a child that is in a home where the parents read or the care providers read to them compared to a home, a child in a home where the parents don't have books, don't read to the children, or the children are not exposed to, you know, music or any of those you know, great things that help children develop in the early years. And the difference in the brain, Julie, is just really amazing. When I saw that slide, it just, that did it for me.
Because, okay, describe that slide. What was that slide that was so important to you?
So the slide that I think made a difference in some of the presentations when I went out in the community was showing what happens in the brain of a child from 0 to 1, and this is just one slide, one example, zero birth through 1 year of age, and the literacy, how many words has a child acquired by their first birthday, how many words, and so then you see a home that reads, you know, at least 15 minutes a day to the child, a home and where there are no books, or the child is not exposed to anything but maybe television, and a home where there's no interaction at all with it between the adults and the children in terms of verbal, even storytelling or anything that doesn't relate to books. When you look at all these three examples and how many words has each child acquired by the age of one in their first birthday, and we look at the child that is read, you know, from birth to 5 years, and even the minimum minutes per day makes a huge difference. They might have 1,600 words in their vocabulary already, might not be able to, you know, say the words, but they recognize the words and they have them, you know. And then next to then the child that perhaps there's more verbal interaction, and also economics plays a big role. If the parents are not in a situation where they have time to spend with their child and they're working all the time, single parents, for example, if they don't have anybody else to take care of their child, those children actually the number of words that they can acquire by their first birthday diminishes almost 50%. Mm-hmm. And then the child that is in a home where there's no stimulation at all in terms of literacy, early literacy, 600 words maybe, 500 by the time their first birthday comes, it's really dramatic when you start looking at those figures. And so that's literacy. And then you can, you know, imagine there are more presentations that deal with the scientific facts of how mm-hmm. the brain develops and all that.
So why is it important why is it so important to recognize this and try to address it? Is it possible for the children who haven't been read to catch up in terms of words? Is there some kind of consequence in their schooling or later on in their lives to not having had enough opportunities at these very young ages? What's important about that research?
I'll tell you a story that one educator that is part of our council mentioned at one time that really painted the picture for me on what the difference is between having the proper support systems for the families and children and not having any of those. And she was telling us that as a preschool teacher and first grade teacher, in first grade she had a number of children that came to her class, and the first thing that she did is she put all their jackets and their, you know, little backpacks in their little cubbies, I guess they call them, and she put their names on for each child, and she told the children, okay, so here's your, you know, space, this is where you're going to put your jacket and this and that. So she went through all that exercise with the children, and there were three children who didn't know that their name was Jesus or Francisco, or they could not identify with the name, you know, that was posted there. And it was the first time they heard that was their name, because at home they had nicknames like Gordito or Poncho or names like that. And she thought that, you know, that's an example of, you know, I mean, this is obviously, you know, a situation where it's more about children not having heard what their full name was before they went to first grade and being surprised by, oh, my name is, you know, whatever name it was, and to find out that they had to start learning what their real name was. Many times also, I mean, we think about those, you know, examples, and we think, well, you know, that could happen to anybody. I mean, when we give nicknames to children, you know, but that's an example of the lack of preparation sometimes when children enter school.
And so then does it make it difficult for those children throughout their schooling years because they entered with a lack of preparation?
Yes, and I think that because they're competing with, you know, when imagine in a race, you know, and that's the best way I can imagine it myself, in a race when you're getting ready to run a race with all the runners, and it's not an equal footing. We are not starting, all children are not starting at the same level when they start school. There are many children that come from families where books were not a part of their upbringing, where maybe they don't go to the library, where perhaps they have stories that are told orally, you know, by grandparents or even the care providers, but the identification or letters even or numbers by their first year, I mean the first, second, third year of life, hasn't been there. So imagine if we're starting all the children and expecting all the children to respond and to compete, especially in this educational, you know, system that we have in this country, in the United States. And we expect all children to run the same race, to respond to the same testing, to do all those things. So I think first things first is here to even out the I don't know how to call it, the
It's as if the playing field needs to be evened out in such a way that all children have an opportunity to succeed. And it sounds like what you're describing is that this science, this new research has shown that some children are coming into the school system in first grade already with difficulties that would continue throughout their school age years.
And I think that the other thing, Julie, that refers to what First Things First is here to do, and especially in the region of Santa Cruz, as we, you know, we know there are many communities, and the regional council that was appointed to serve in this region, to make decisions, to be the decision maker, really, in terms of how those funds that are allocated to our region from the state are going to be used for these purposes to prepare children. And we start thinking about, well, what do we really need to do in this community? What are the needs to make things even, to make sure that all children, not just low income, not just children that are coming from parents who, you know, who are what they call the poor poverty or below the poverty level, but this is all children, because even homes that have the means, you know, we're talking parents working full time, they have insurance, they have, you know, they have the average income. Many times parents don't have time to pay attention to children's development or even know that early childhood literacy or early childhood preparation and education is that important, or how the brain develops even, you know. And so we are here in this region, this regional council, to talk about, to help educate parents, educate caregivers, and the community about how to help families and children succeed really in life and in school. And so it's a huge task.
It sounds like it.
Yes.
What I want to do now is just go back and give a brief overview of the flow of the money through the system, and then go more deeply into the kinds of programs, because I think it's more than just education, from what I've read, that there are programs to support children's experiences in childcare centers, for instance, and you know, many different aspects of the life of a child in the 0 to 5 year age group. But so let's just start it with the path of the money. So first of all, the voters in 2006 in Arizona approved this initiative. It was on the ballot. And how would you characterize that vote? It seemed like it was passed very strongly by the voters.
Yes, it was. And I think basically Arizona spoke and they said, we want this for our children. And so it really, you know, I wasn't here then yet. I had just arrived from California. So, but I know that this was what they call the, you know, when everybody, pretty much everyone who voted for this, you know,
yeah,
initiative.
I think I've seen the word landslide used.
Yes.
So it was quite overwhelmingly approved by the voters. And so what the voters approved is an 85 cent tax on each package of cigarettes?
On each packet of cigarettes. So basically what the, you know, I mean, it's an interesting concept because here we are taxing something that at the same time there is education and awareness that the tobacco funds eventually will decrease because hopefully people will be educated about smoking and all that. But the benefit of those who choose to smoke is that they know that some of the funds that they're paying for their cigarettes are going to a good cause. And in this case, and that's where First Things First gets their its funding.
Okay, so that tax money is collected by the state of Arizona, and then the state First Things First organization then sends a portion of that money to each local area?
Correct. There are 31 regions in the state under the First Things First umbrella. Those regions, so let me then paint the picture of who's who in First Things
First.
Oh, good.
Please do that.
Okay. So at the top, by the governor of the state of Arizona, there is a board that is appointed to serve as the, basically, they're the pilots here. They're driving this whole thing. So there are members of a community in Arizona that represent different sectors, and they sit at the board to make those decisions. Then that board elects and appoints councils at the regional levels, and there are 31 of those. And
31 regions.
31 regions. Mm-hmm. And we are the Santa Cruz region, and so.
And does the Santa Cruz region relate to the boundaries of Santa Cruz County?
No, because the regions are actually decided by zip code. So it's possible that our Santa Cruz region would be crossing over to South Pima, our neighbor, or it might cross over a little bit to Cochise. The idea is to keep things within the county areas, but it's possible that some communities are chosen by zip code. So that's why we stay away from counties and we talk about regions. So the Santa Cruz region has South Pima north, and then to the east we have Cochise region. And then, you know, if you look at the map of Arizona, we have, you know, Central Maricopa, we have the Salt River Maricopa Indian Reservation. We also have the tribal regions and so 31 regions where the funds that come into this one, you know, stream of funding receive right now, and I can tell you how the dedicated revenue stream is allocated.
Oh, okay.
Every region receives funding based on population 0 to 5 years of age. So, for instance, in Santa Cruz, the census data shows that there are 5,000 children birth through age 5 that are and live in this community. That was the last census. We know that those numbers have changed, and the state board makes adjustments for that. So the allocation per child at this point is about $218 per child in the whole state.
Is that per year?
Per year.
Oh, okay.
So each child receives, so to speak, receives $218 to help them with, you know, with what they need. And of course, that's not enough. But that's if we distributed the money among all the children that are 0 to 5 living in the state of Arizona, that's what it amounts to, 218. So then Santa Cruz, because the population count is close to 5,000 from the census, receives 913,861
In 1 year.
in 1 year. And that's our allocation based on the population.
Of the Santa Cruz region.
Santa Cruz region.
Okay. So then, how is that money allocated into programs, initiatives, things that will make a difference for the 0 to 5 age group in the Santa Cruz region?
So the state board appoints 11 members of what we call councils in each region. The Santa Cruz region has 11 seats that are representatives from the business community, representatives from the faith community, from education community, government, parents, and at large, people interested in the early childhood education and health topic. And or people simply they want to be part of this committee, this council. So we have 11 volunteers that go through a process of application. They are selected and appointed by the state board through a very thorough application process. So you know that whoever sits in this council, the Santa Cruz Regional Partnership Council, has been interviewed as if it was a job. And they need to have all the qualifications and, you know, references and all the things that, you know, that would be needed to make sure that the people that sit on these councils have the not only the education but also the interest in making sure that the community and that the monies are spent well and in a yes.
Okay, so this is almost $1 million every year based on this past year's allocation for the Santa Cruz region. And you said that there are 11 seats on the council. And is there anyone from Patagonia who sits on the council?
Yes, we have the parent representative from Patagonia. Her name is Tammy Young, and Tammy has been with us, I guess now almost a year. And so she's the representative for your community in Patagonia, and she represents it well. And
And before Tammy, we had a Patagonia representative.
yes, and I know that the family moved out of the
Yeah,
area,
but I
Patagonia.
think he's back.
Sasha Luton, I believe that's his last name, and he was our first representative in our council from Patagonia, and then he moved out of the area for a while, and I believe, as you say, he's back. So Tammy Young then took on that seat.
And are there any available seats on that board if there are people from Patagonia who might be interested in being part of this?
Yes, we have two open seats right now, and one is a philanthropic representative, somebody who works with a foundation or perhaps sits on a board that awards funding to causes in the community. So if anyone who is in that community that works with philanthropy, it would be great to have that representation. And of course, it's open to all regions, and anybody can apply.
You mean
But
anyone within
anyone
Santa Cruz
region,
region?
yes. But of course, I have always believed, and I know that the council believes, and the state, that in 11 member council, you have to have geographical representation, and you have to have the voices of all communities and hopefully all sectors of the community. And that's why it's a great group to have. And so we hope that also Patagonia, not only Patagonia, but maybe Carmen to Macacoary and even south of Amado, that people would come forward and, apply for those seats, because we need representation.
Well, and it's such an important opportunity to help monies that have been collected from this tax be used effectively to make a difference in the children 0 to 5 years old in these outlying communities. So it's a wonderful way to serve the community. So, give us a little bit more information about what kinds of programs the Santa Cruz Regional Partnership Council has funded, and particularly programs that Patagonia parents might be able to access.
In the last year, the Santa Cruz Regional Council allocated, we have several awards that have gone out to the community, but the major ones, and I'll go through the list. The first one that was awarded last year through an expedited, and I mean expedited because it was done in a quicker fashion than First Things First had planned on doing, and that was based on the economic situation in the state. And so the first fund that was awarded in this region was the home visiting and pro motora services.
And now, what year was that
And that
first one?
was the first one that was awarded was 2009
Okay, and that's so the
fiscal year.
initiative passed in 2006, and then it took a while to get things organized enough for the first money to be awarded in Santa Cruz region. Okay.
And so the first year after 2006, what happened really was the structuring or creating the structure at the state level. And that was, probably appointing all the board members and creating and hiring the people that were going to administer and, and drive this new
And
system.
then collecting the tax to, well, yeah, so.
And building really the infrastructure, we often say within our work and our colleagues when we are at meetings that we have this image of building a plane, in a sense, and I often stay away from saying we're flying it because we're not flying it yet. It's really being built, and the state board is really, in my view, they're the federal aviation, group that is overseeing it and making sure that all the rules and regulations are in place. Because remember that the funds are coming from the voters. So in order for a system to work from funds that are coming from the taxpayers, there needs to be a system that is transparent and it's accountable and that it uses the funds exactly what they were designed to be used for. And so in this case, the creation of the system has taken quite a bit of time because it has to be, set on a very strong foundation in order to work for all the communities.
Yes. Okay. So then the first grant or allocation is, do you use grant or allocation interchangeably? Or
Allocation.
allocation. Okay. So the first allocation from the Santa Cruz region was for this emergency situation in.
Yes, it was in 2009 when the board was still working on how we were going to award the money to the communities and the processes for all of that. And so they decided that since we had an economic situation in the state where parents and perhaps even agencies were needing to have the funds sooner than later, then they expedited the awards. And so Mariposa Community Health Center in the Santa Cruz region was awarded the first grant that the council in Santa Cruz put out, which is the home visiting strategy. The home visiting really consists of education to parents, providing resources, where to find, what parents need, what families were needing at that moment. And then, so that was one grant. The next grant that.
No, I should, excuse me for interrupting, but I should also mention that the Mariposa Community Health Centers operates the Family Health Center in Patagonia, and so they have a connection, a very strong connection in Patagonia.
Yes.
Yeah,
And that was
okay.
something that the regional council considered when they were ready to award or choose the agency that would serve best the interest of a larger community rather than one local community. And Mariposa certainly has proven to be, you know, the agency that, that could facilitate those services and reach out in, you know, in a way to different regions like Puerto Rico, Patagonia, and Carmen to Macacuri, and even south of Pima County, which is Amado.
Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt. Yes. So then you were going on to the next allocation.
Yes, and then the next allocation is another grant that was provided to Mariposa as well for oral health prevention and fluoride application for children in their first year of life. And so they received that award. So Mariposa received the home visiting award and also the oral health prevention and fluoride application award. Total of, you know, I can give you numbers if you want or not. But,
sure.
But so the first award was around 300,000. The second was around 75,000 for the oral health. And at the same time, we knew that there were families who were needing to access food and also specifically food for infants, formula and those kinds of things in this region. And so we awarded another $61,000 to the community food bank in Nogales to distribute food boxes to families in need that had children, specifically with children ages 0 to 5 years of age. So, for instance, a family that had 5 children and only one child was 0 to 5, they would qualify for these food boxes. And so that's another award. And I think those are the three most recent ones. There's another very exciting one that is in the works right now that I think it's going to be such a it's going to make an impact in this region, and that is a family resource center. And even though we right now are looking at two communities, the larger communities, Nogales and Rio Rico, to have two centers, family resource centers, the regional council hopes that this will be the beginning of creating centers in all the communities in this Santa Cruz region that would have a center where families can come to receive information, to receive education. There's even, you know, one of the activities and one of the deliverables, we call, that we expect that the center would provide families with opportunities to exchange information and also clothing, recycle, you know, baby's clothing that many times families, you know, don't know where to take it or who to share it with. And the list of services that a family resource center provides are just, you know, it's a long list, but I can tell you that there will be opportunities for parents to receive information about how to put a financial plan together for the family, help in learning about domestic violence prevention. There will be also workshops where parents will receive information about brain development, where to go to receive health insurance for children, and all those kinds of services that will at times be provided right there at the resource centers, but many times will be referred to other agencies in the region that the parents can access. So the council is very excited about this one award that we are in the middle of conversations and negotiations with an entity that hopefully will be awarded and that will sign a contract with First Things First by the end of this month, beginning of next month. So that's a very exciting prospect.
Now, I've also seen information about efforts to work on supporting childcare. What can you say about First Things First's work in that area, or has that not taken place yet?
Well, Santa Cruz the Santa Cruz region has several areas that the council is looking at in terms of allocating funds towards. One is professional development. We know that besides the parents receiving education and support systems and support and help, the care providers of the child care centers, either private homes or centers that are open for children 0 to 5 years of age. So those are two areas. So that's professional development. Then we have the teachers that are in the centers or in the homes helping children. We know that in many cases, many of the teachers or care providers that work in the centers have not been able to upgrade their educational level because they work every day and they don't have time to, you know, to go out and try to get the next degree or the CDA, which is the basic license that would be required to work in a center. So first things first, one's quality. Quality First is another initiative, actually, that is at the state level that the council could align with. We, at this point, are looking at two areas that we want to impact in this region. One is scholarships to care providers and anyone who wants to enter the field of early childhood education. So there are two sides to this. Those that are already working in the field of early childhood education and those that are interested in entering the field as a, for a career.
And so with the scholarships for people interested in entering the field, are you targeting high school graduates who are going on to college?
Is that? Yes. And that's very specific. It's a, we call it the Grow Our Own scholarship program that this council put together, where we have 23 students now enrolled at Cochise Community College Center in Nogales, where students that are interested in entering the field can receive a scholarship to even obtain their first degree, which is an AA degree in early childhood education. And so first things first, partner with the community college to offer the scholarships. And so that's another initiative. Mm-hmm. And then we have a statewide initiative that is also part of the regional strategies for the council, and that is the TEACH, which is the TEACH scholarships. And those are for people who are already in the field. And so it's a combination of their employer providing them with the hours they need to go to classes and providing them with the time and the pay for those hours. And then a combination of a scholarship provided by the regional councils to those individuals. So we believe that the system can be changed only if we can tap into all the areas and all the people that work with children. So we want to make an impact in professional development of those who care for the children. And we want to also make sure that that the parents are receiving the information that they need to raise their children. Then the other areas are agencies that they want to access our funds to be able to build centers that have high quality. For instance, some of the schools, the preschools that exist in this area might need to improve their playground equipment, but they don't know where to go or how to do that, or they don't have the funds. First Things First has an initiative called Quality First, where those centers can apply and receive the funds to upgrade. And so those are some of the initiatives.
It sounds very, very comprehensive in terms of that you all have thought about all different aspects of a child's life in the 0 to 5 age range, and how can the community support those children in that age range in every possible way.
Right. And we know that it is a community, that it takes the community. I know it sounds a little cliche, but it really does take a whole community to raise healthy children. Mm. And I think that that's what the intent of First Things First is, to make sure that while the regional council is here to allocate the funds, the community's responsibility also is to support and to come to the meetings that are open to the public to tell the council what are the needs in their community. We went to Patagonia for three meetings. The
and
council
all,
moves
were
around.
All of those in 2009?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so we, the council, met three times in Patagonia, and they were just so impressed, and it was really a perfect opportunity for the council to hear about the needs in Patagonia, and also to talk to the people in Patagonia who are interested in helping, and I know that that we are at the beginning of building this, you know, this system and the programs and awarding the funds to the agencies that are doing the work, because we're not here, Julie, to, first things first, is not here to reinvent any of the programs or recreate any of the programs. We're here to add to what is already there in the communities. And so that's really the job, the work of First Things First, is to increase and to add to what is already being offered for families and children 0 to 5 in the region.
Hmm.
So.
Well, you clearly have a passion for this work, and I was wondering if you would care to share a little bit of personal information about where that comes from with you.
Well, being a mother and also a grandmother now, and also in my background, I worked in, you could say, both sides of the spectrum in terms of my career. I worked with children in the juvenile system for many years in children's mental health, you know. And then I moved into the early childhood education work, and that was with California's First Five. I feel that, you know, in my career and in my experience, I have seen both sides of the spectrum, and that's why I'm so passionate about investing in early childhood education, because I see and I saw firsthand what happens when we don't invest in the early years of children.
And are you referring to your experiences in the juvenile system?
In the juvenile system.
Mm.
And
what do you mean by the juvenile system?
In California, there were, well, first my first exposure into the juvenile system was through my job as a reporter. I worked with the Spanish language television networks. And I was the reporter that went out and did many of the stories that related to homeless youth in Los Angeles, for example, that related to children in the correctional facilities, the youth that are many times literally thrown away by the society because they see that there is no hope, you know, or the systems are set up in such a way that these children really just have one option, and the option is correctional facilities. When I entered that system through the children's mental health after doing a report in Santa Cruz in California about a group of parents that were really tired of having their children being sent to, you know, to programs or even to classrooms where they were labeled special needs children, and they were separated from the mainstream, and they were separated from their peers, where they, you know, again, here we are, the playing field is not even, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so doing that kind of reporting, and I remember clearly speaking with a group of parents. They were trying to do what was called in California at that time the wraparound programs,
mm-hmm.
where parents, community, educators, and counselors would come together to help a family with a child that needed extra assistance in accessing, you know, the programs, the educational programs, or even children that had ended up in the correctional facilities because of mental issues and not necessarily because of their behavior. And so I remember walking to this one group made up of parents. And what really almost made me change careers at that point was the fact that many of those parents were from immigrant families coming from Mexico that had children either in the mental health system or in the correctional facilities who did not speak the language, did not know what their rights were, did not know what options their children had. And so I left television and I went into the mental health programs to coordinate and to facilitate the parent group, support group. And then that took me into going into courts to represent sometimes the parents that had a child that was going to be sent to, you know, camps where they thought that they needed to go instead of, you know, other alternatives. So out of that experience and noticing how much money was being spent on facilities to correct the problems and the issues with youth, I noticed that California 5 was starting and was being created. And I went into that system, helping them with the communications aspect of it for the migrant families and with the Spanish-speaking population. And interestingly enough, California doesn't have a law that says that you cannot have or present materials or, you know, anything in other languages besides English. So there was not a problem with First Five presenting all the materials in all kinds of languages in California, as opposed to here in Arizona, where English is the official language, where we are not allowed to use voters' funds to translate materials or to present information in Spanish.
And when you talk about California 5, is that a similar program to First Things First in Arizona?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the exact same program. It was created also by voters in California. And then there's a North Carolina model as well for early childhood education that I know First Things First has taken some of their success stories and the models that have been successful and that have been proven to work well. And so First Five really has helped to build many of the other models in other states in terms of early childhood. So I think that the First Things First has other models that they have learned from and are taking pieces of to build the system here and to make sure that we don't repeat the same, mistakes, because, you know, as you create a system, you have to sometimes, you know, you face challenges and the programs sometimes are, you know, built on experiences from other regions.
Yeah. Well, as we wind down, I also want to, in the interest of journalistic full disclosure, let the listeners know that I've been involved with First Things First very briefly so far, but with the consulting firm Clegg & Associates in helping to create a report that will serve the Regional Partnership Council here in Santa Cruz. And would you like to just explain the role of the reports?
Yes. One of the jobs of the regional councils is to make sure that when they allocate funds to the needs of the region, that they do it knowing what the needs and what the assets are in those communities. So this regional council had one first report that was completed in 2008, which is accessible in our website.
And what is the website?
Yes, so the website is AZ, as in zebra, FDF.gov. And we have that first report on our website. And that report barely begins to paint the picture of the needs in the region of Santa Cruz. And now that we have the privilege of working with Clegg & Associates and with you, Julie, I know that this regional council is hoping that the next report which the reports, the needs and assets reports, are done every 2 years. And so now we're looking at creating the next one, which you will be a part of and working on, to basically find out what the needs are in the communities, because many of the strategies or the allocations are based on the needs. So, for instance, you know, we know that Rio Rico and Nogales have a very high rate of teen pregnancies, you know, and teen births. The council took that into consideration when creating the family resource centers. And so if the next needs and assets report shows that there's a need in a region or in a community, then the council considers allocating funds based on those findings. Mm-hmm. So it's a very important document, and I think it helps in the council to make their decisions in a way that, you know, they take into account what is working well in the communities, what is already there, and so that there is no duplication of services. Because one of the ways that funds can be diluted and funds can be actually lost in a way is to create programs that are already working well in the community, and to, you know, in a way, reinvent the wheel, and we don't want that. The regional council is very has been very specific about adding and enhancing all the programs that already exist in the region. So.
Okay, so I wanted to let our listeners know that Clegg and Associates is headed by Judy Clegg, who owns property in Patagonia and visits often. So we're very pleased to have the opportunity to serve the First Things First Santa Cruz Regional Partnership Council. So as we conclude, let's again give Patagonia folks information about how to contact and how to get involved with this effort.
We have an office in Nogales, and we have a number that I can give out to your listeners. And the office is located, obviously, in the larger community, and so the number for our office is 520, area code 761-3012. And of course I gave you the website, but I can repeat it again. You can find more information about First Things First through our website, and the website is azfdf.gov. And you can find all kinds of information. As you know, this is open to the public, and any information that we have with First Things First, even our minutes for our meetings, are found in that website. Also, you will find that our meetings are open to the public in the region, and so the website will also give you that information, where we meet, when we meet, so that the community can participate in this decision-making.
And we can remind folks that there are two available council positions.
Yes. We have two seats vacant in the Regional Partnership Council. One is the philanthropic seat, and the other one is at large. And anyone who's interested, there is a application process, and we can help with that. You can call us at our office, or you can go to the website, and you're able to actually just click in there and go into apply for regional council seats, and it will walk you right through it. It's very easy. But if you need any help in accessing that, please call us at our office, and we're happy to help you.
So, all right. Yeah. Well, Teresa, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed having the chance to learn more about First Things First through your perspectives and your background, and really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Julie. I appreciate the opportunity, and I really hope that the community of Patagonia knows that the Regional Partnership Council is interested in having representation beyond what we have right now from that region, because we want to serve all communities and all children in the Santa Cruz region.
Thank you.
Thank you.